Chapter 61. Contempt. You are giving yourself no end of trouble, you and your faithful henchmen, to crack an empty nut. There are no fruits here, as you imagine. There are a few sovereigns, which you may have if you like, and since you have called yourself a bandit, yas, drawled Mr. Jones. Hat, rather than a swindler. Open warfare at least. Very good. Only let me tell you, that there were never in the world two more deluded bandits, never. Hayes uttered these words with such energy that Mr. Jones, stiffening up, seemed to become thinner and taller in his metallic blue dressing gown against the whitewashed wall. Fooled by a silly rascally innkeeper, Hayes went on. Walked over like a pair of children with a promise of sweets. I didn't talk with that disgusting animal, muttered Mr. Jones sullenly, but he convinced Martin, who is no fool. I should think he wanted very much to be convinced, said Hest, with the courteous intonation so well known in the islands. Don't want to disturb your touching trust in your follower, but he must be the most credulous brigand in existence. What do you imagine? If the story of my riches were ever so true, do you think Schomburg would have imparted it to you from sheer altruism? Is that the way of the world, Mr. Jones? For a moment the lower jaw of Ricardo's gentleman dropped, but it came up with a snap of scorn, and he said with spectral intensity, the beast is cowardly. He was frightened, and wanted to get rid of us, if you want to know, Mr. Hest. I don't know that the material inducement was so very great, but I was bored, and we decided to accept the bribe. I don't regret it. All my life I have been seeking new impressions, and you have turned out to be something quite out of the common. Martin, of course, looks to the material results. He's simple and faithful and wonderfully acute. Ah, yes. He's on the track, and now Hest's speech had the character of politely grim raillery, but not sufficiently on the track, as yet, to make it quite convenient to shoot me without more ado. Didn't Schomburg tell you precisely where I conceal the fruit of my rapins? Pah! Don't you know he would have told you anything, true or false, from a very clear motive? Revenge. Mad hate the unclean idiot. Mr. Jones did not seem very much moved. On his right hand the doorway incessantly flickered with distant lightning, and the continuous rumble of thunder went on irritatingly, like the growl of an inarticulate giant muttering fatuously. Hest overcame his immense repugnance to allude to her whose image, cowering in the forest, was constantly before his eyes, with all the pathos and force of its appeal, august, pitiful, and almost holy to him. It was in a hurried, embarrassed manner that he went on. If it had not been for that girl whom he persecuted with his insane and odious passion, and who threw herself on my protection, he would never have, but you know well enough. I don't know, burst out Mr. Jones with amazing heat. Hat hotel keeper tried to talk to me once of some girl he had lost, but I told him I didn't want to hear any of his beastly women stories. It had something to do with you, had it? Hest looked on serenely at this outburst, then lost his patience a little. What sort of comedy is this? You don't mean to say that you didn't know that I had, that there was a girl living with me here? One could see that the eyes of Mr. Jones had become fixed in the depths of their black holes by the gleam of white becoming steady there. The whole man seemed frozen still. Here. Here. He screamed out twice. There was no mistaking his astonishment, his shocked incredulity, something like frightened disgust. Hest was disgusted also, but in another way. He too was incredulous. He regretted having mentioned the girl, but the thing was done. His repugnance had been overcome in the heat of his argument against the absurd bandit. Is it possible that you didn't know of that significant fact? He inquired. If the only effect of truth in the welter of silly lies that deceived you so easily? No, I didn't, Mr. Jones shouted. But Martin did. He added in a faint whisper, which Hayes' ears just caught and no more. I kept her out of sight as long as I could, said Hayes. herbs, with your bringing up traditions, and so on. You will understand my reason for it. He knew before. Mr. Jones mourned in a hollow voice. He knew of her from the first. Backed hard against the wall, he no longer watched haste. He had the air of a man who had seen an abyss yawning under his feet. If I want to kill him, this is my time, thought Haste, but he did not move. Next moment Mr. Jones jerked his head up, glaring with sardonic fury. I have a good mind to shoot you, you woman-ridden hermit, you man in the moon, that can't exist without no, it won't be you that I'll shoot. It's the other woman lover, the prevaricating, sly, low-class, amorous cuss. And he shaved under my very nose. I'll shoot him. He's gone mad, thought Haste, startled by the specter's sudden fury. He felt himself more in danger, nearer death, than ever since he had entered that room. An insane bandit is a deadly combination. He did not, could not know that Mr. Jones was quick-minded enough to see already the end of his reign over his excellent secretary's thoughts and feelings, the coming failure of Ricardo's fidelity. A woman had intervened. A woman, a girl, who apparently possessed the power to awaken men's disgusting folly. Her power had been proved in two instances already: the beastly innkeeper, and that man with mustaches, upon whom Mr. Jones, his deadly right hand twitching in his pocket, glared more in repulsion than in anger. The very object of the expedition was lost from view in his sudden and overwhelming sense of utter insecurity. And this made Mr. Jones feel very savage, but not against the man with the mustaches. Thus, while Haste was really feeling that his life was not worth 2 minutes' purchase, he heard himself addressed with no affection of languid impertinence, but with a burst of feverish determination. Here, let's call a truce, said Mr. Jones. Haste's heart was too sick to allow him to smile. Have I been making war on you? He asked wearily. How do you expect me to attach any meaning to your words? He went on. You seem to be a morbid, senseless sort of bandit. We don't speak the same language. If I were to tell you why I am here, talking to you, you wouldn't believe me, because you would not understand me. It certainly isn't the love of life, from which I have divorced myself long ago, not sufficiently, perhaps. But if you are thinking of yours, then I repeat to you that it has never been in danger from me. I am unarmed. Mr. Jones was biting his lower lip in a deep meditation. It was only towards the last that he looked at Haste. Unarmed, eh? Then he burst out violently. Tell you, a gentleman is no match for the common herd. And yet one must make use of the brutes. Unarmed, eh? And I suppose that creature is of the commonest sort. You could hardly have got her out of a drawing room. Though they're all alike, for that matter. Unarmed. It's a pity. I am in much greater danger than you are, or I am much mistaken. But I am not, I know my man. He lost his air of mental vacancy, and broke out in 2 shrill exclamations. To Haste they seemed madder than anything that had gone before. On the track. On the scent, he cried, forgetting himself to the point of executing a dance of rage in the middle of the floor. Haste looked on, fascinated by this skeleton in a gay dressing gown, jerkily agitated like a grotesque toy on the end of an invisible string. It became quiet suddenly. I might have smelt a rat. I always knew that this would be the danger. He changed suddenly to a confidential tone, fixing his sepulchral stare on Haste. And yet here I am, taken in by the fellow, like the veriest fool. I've been always on the watch for some beastly influence, but here I am, fairly caught. He shaved himself right in front of me, and I never guessed. The shrill laugh, following on the low tone of secrecy, sounded so convincingly insane that Haste got up, as if moved by a spring. Mr. Jones stepped back 2 paces, but displayed no uneasiness. It's as clear as daylight, he uttered mournfully, and fell silent. Behind him the doorway flickered lividly, and the sound, as of a naval action somewhere away on the horizon, filled the breathless pause. Mr. Jones inclined his head on his shoulder. His mood had completely changed. What do you say, unarmed man? Shall we go and see what is detaining my trusted Martin so long? He asked me to keep you engaged in friendly conversation till he made a further examination of that track. Ha, ha, ha. He is no doubt ransacking my house, said Hest. He was as bewildered. It seemed to him that all this was an incomprehensible dream, or perhaps an elaborate other-world joke, contrived by that specter in a gorgeous dressing gown. Mr. Jones looked at him with a horrible, cadaverous smile of inscrutable mockery, and pointed to the door. Hest passed through it first. His feelings had become so blunted that he did not care how soon he was shot in the back. How oppressive the air is, the voice of Mr. Jones said at his elbow. His stupid storm gets on my nerves. I would welcome some rain, though it would be unpleasant to get wet. On the other hand, this exasperating thunder has the advantage of covering the sound of our approach. The lightning's not so convenient. Ah, your house is fully illuminated. My clever Martin is punishing your stock of candles. He belongs to the unceremonious classes, which are also unlovely, untrustworthy, and so on. I left the candles burning, said Hest, to save him trouble. You really believed he would go to your house? Asked Mr. Jones with genuine interest. I had that notion, strongly. I do believe he is there now. And you don't mind? No. You don't. Mr. Jones stopped to wonder. You are an extraordinary man, he said suspiciously, and moved on, touching elbows with Hest. In the latter's breast dwelt a deep silence, the complete silence of unused faculties. At this moment, by simply shouldering Mr. Jones, he could have thrown him down and put himself, by a couple of leaps, beyond the certain aim of the revolver, but he did not even think of that. His very will seemed dead of weariness. He moved automatically, his head low, like a prisoner captured by the evil power of a masquerading skeleton out of a grave. Mr. Jones took charge of the direction. They fetched a wide sweep. The echoes of distant thunder seemed to dog their footsteps. By the by, said Mr. Jones, as if unable to restrain his curiosity, aren't you anxious about that ouch? That fascinating creature to whom you owe whatever pleasure you can find in our visit? I have placed her in safety, said Hest. I took good care of that. Mr. Jones laid a hand on his arm. You have? Look. Is that what you mean? Hest raised his head. In the flicker of lightning, the desolation of the cleared ground on his left leaped out and sank into the night, together with the elusive forms of things distant, pale, unearthly. But in the brilliant square of the door he saw the girl, the woman he had longed to see once more, as if enthroned, with her hands on the arms of the chair. She was in black, her face was white, her head dreamily inclined on her breast. He saw her only as low as her knees. He saw her there, in the room, alive with a somber reality. It was no mocking vision. She was not in the forest, but there. She sat there in the chair, seemingly without strength, yet without fear, tenderly stooping. Can you understand their power? Whispered the hot breath of Mr. Jones into his ear. And there be a more disgusting spectacle? It's enough to make the earth detestable. She seems to have found her affinity. Move on closer. If I have to shoot you in the end, then perhaps you will die cured. Hest obeyed the pushing pressure of a revolver barrel between his shoulders. He felt it distinctly, but he did not feel the ground under his feet. They found the steps, without his being aware that he was ascending them slowly, one by one. Doubt entered into him, a doubt of a new kind, formless, hideous. It seemed to spread itself all over him, enter his limbs, and lodge in his entrails. He stopped suddenly, with a thought that he who experienced such a feeling had no business to live, or perhaps was no longer living. Everything, the bungalow, the forest, the open ground, trembled incessantly, the earth, the sky itself, shivered all the time, and the only thing immovable in the shuddering universe was the interior of the lighted room, and the woman in black sitting in the light of the 8 candle flames. They flung around her an intolerable brilliance which hurt his eyes, seemed to sear his very brain with the radiation of infernal heat. It was some time before his scorched eyes made out Ricardo seated on the floor at some little distance, his back to the doorway, but only partly so, one side of his upturned face showing the absorbed, all-forgetful rapture of his contemplation. The grip of Mr. Jones' hard claw drew Hest back a little. In the roll of thunder, swelling and subsiding, he whispered in his ear a sarcastic, "Of course." A great shame descended upon Hest, the shame of guilt, absurd and maddening. Mr. Jones drew him still farther back into the darkness of the veranda. "This is serious," he went on, distilling his ghostly venom into Hest's very ear. "Had to shut my eyes many times to his little flings, but this is serious. He has found his soulmate. Mud souls, obscene and cunning. Mud bodies, to the mud of the gutter." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.